Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Statements and opinions by guests of Mysterious Radio are not to be considered as endorsed by sponsors or affiliated networks. Any rebroadcast, reproduction, or other use of this podcast without the express written consent of Mysterious Radio is strictly prohibited.
Get ready for a night filled with conspiracies, strange places, the paranormal, UFOs, legends, and myths from around the world. With your hosts, K-Town, on Mysterious Radio.
All right, thank you for joining me tonight for another edition of Mysterious Radio. I am your host, K-Town, and tonight, my special guest is author Dan Baldwin. And he's written a book, it's called The Paranormal Pendulum, that Dan uses for spirit communications and to help find missing people. This is an interesting one, as Dan tells us about his insights into pendulum dowsing, and this book also includes transcripts of actual paranormal investigations. I'm going to talk to Dan about some of the missing person cases and some of the cases that he's working on currently, but first I ask him how this all started for him.
Yeah, it starts about 20 years ago. I was never considered myself a psychic or anything along those lines, although, you know, I believe that there were psychics out there. And one day I just felt an extremely strong urge to help find missing children. It was just one of those overpowering feelings. And at the time, I felt compelled to do it. You know, I had to do it, but I had no training. I'm not a policeman. I'm not a private detective. I have no training in investigative techniques. And it just occurred to me that the psychic route might be a way that I could, you know, fulfill that calling. And through, you know, visiting with various psychics and going to a psychic bookstores and things like that, I came across the pendulum and I said, well, I can do that. And I started working with pendulum dowsing, you know, 20 years ago, and pretty much self-taught. I wrote for about 15 years looking for missing persons, and I still do a little bit of that. And about 5 years ago, I started doing paranormal investigations and seeing if the pendulum dowsing would work in that arena. And out of those experiences, I've written, you know, 4 or 5 books on pendulum dowsing, which kind of brings us up to where we are right now.
Oh, that's interesting there. Okay, so I just want people to understand that you decided to find missing children or see what you can do to help, but you're using the pendulum technique to do that. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. All right, so first, if you don't mind, do you mind talking about some of those missing children cases a little bit here in just a minute, or...
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Some I can't name names and things like that, but yeah, I definitely can discuss it. Some of the cases are still open.
Okay, got you. All right.
But yeah.
First, tell us what pendulum dowsing is.
Basically, I think most of your listeners are familiar with seeing what they used to call the witching stick, which is a Y-shaped stick usually made out of willow, where the old farmer out in the North 40 would use it to, you know, find water or to look for a well. It's the same technique, only I use a weight on a string, and basically... You hold the weight on the string, and when it spins to the right, that is generally a yes answer. When it spins to the left, that is generally a no answer. And you just ask a question after question after question after question until you get, you know, you narrow your questions down to the answer you want to get. Yeah, for example, if I'm looking for a missing person, you know, you would ask, you know, is this person in Arizona? Say you get a yes. Is this person in Phoenix? You would get a yes. Is this person in North Phoenix? Say you would get a no. Is this person in South Phoenix? You would get a yes. And you can actually, by asking question after question after question, you could find a location down to a street address.
That's amazing. Okay, so tell us, have you drilled down to see exactly what you're tapping into to get your answers? Have you looked at that? I mean, what is giving you those answers?
Yeah, short answer is a higher power. And actually, I don't get into defining higher power. That's up to the different religions. But I think everybody recognizes that there is a higher power, and that's what you're tapping into. In a nutshell, I think when you swing the weight on a string, your subconscious taps into that higher power. And whatever your question is answered by the higher power, goes to your subconscious, and then your subconscious actually directs the swing of the pendulum.
I got you. Okay, that is really
interesting.
But
how you define that higher power, I'll leave that up to, you know, the religious people.
Okay, so when you're holding it, you said you use a weight on a string, so it's not really an object that's in the shape of a point or like an arrow or something, like a typical pendulum. You're not using that?
Well, the ones I use are actually come to a point because I do a lot of, I call it map dowsing. And the point is very, very small, so you get to a very small area. But the size, the shape, or the material, or the weight on the string is totally irrelevant. It's one of the things I keep trying to point out to people is a pendulum is just a tool. There's no magic whatsoever in the pendulum itself. The so-called magic occurs between your subconscious and the higher power. You know, the pendulum is just a rock on a string. And it doesn't matter what it is, what it's made of, what shape it's in, only as long as you're comfortable with it.
Got you. All right. So, okay, let me make note of that because you said you do map dowsing. Okay, so I want to talk about that as well. Okay, so let's talk about the missing children cases. So tell us about, one of the first ones you worked on and what kind of results you were able to obtain.
Well, generally when I get called in, it's about, I only worked with the, with authorities, not directly through people. So when I get called in or people that do what I do get called in, usually it's a cold case. So usually the results are going to be, you find human remains rather than living human beings. Although we have found, living human beings who are lost.
So you're called in by the authorities working on the case.
Yes, that's the idea.
I got you.
But yeah, I got called into, there's a real interesting case that shows how a group of psychics can work together. There was a person who went missing several years ago, and he was an avid camper and had a four-wheel drive vehicle so he could get way back into the wilderness. And we knew from his family that he liked to go camping in Arkansas, Colorado, Utah, and New Mexico. That was our search area. And so a group of us got together trying to find the guy. And each one of us got little bits and pieces of the clues. For example, one of the people working on the case got just the number 260. Another person got a reading that the missing man had stopped off at some kind of general store where he stopped and bought some can of beans or something from a little old man. Somebody else got a perfect description of where we would find him in terms of he's in a tent in a wooded area. There are a bunch of trees with red striping or red painting around him. And I was using map dowsing, and I actually dows the area using the question, is he in Arizona? Yes. Is he north of this road? Is he south of that road? Is he east of this road? East of west of that road? And actually got a specific location on a specific, back road. And the family started going up there. They were looking for the guy, and they stopped off at a small grocery store, and it was run by a little old man, and the guy had actually stopped in there to buy a can of beans for his camping trip. And then somebody else said, well, 260, there's a highway called 260. So he was obviously going down Highway 260. And the road that I had pendulum doused was off Highway 260. So, bottom line is, after all this work, the family went up there and discovered the campsite. And it was just as the other psychic had described it. It had a tent. It was in a specific wooded area. And the red striping was forest markers for red spray paint for trimming down the trees. And so, through all of us working together, we were able to locate the missing person.
Was he dead or alive?
Yeah, unfortunately, he had committed suicide.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that, when I was dowsing his location, I always ask, is the person alive? Is the person deceased? That sort of thing. I got that he was physically alive, but in extreme, extreme danger of dying. And I think when I was dowsing him was probably right after he had killed himself or shot himself.
I see. So why are you saying that? Because...
Yeah, because I got that he was still alive, but when they found him, he was deceased. So I think when I was dowsing and I asked, is he alive? I got a yes answer from my pendulum, but I also, in asking questions, got that he was in serious danger of passing.
I see. So
I think I was doing the dowsing about the time he committed suicide.
Committed suicide, right. He was dying at that time.
Very, very fast.
Wow. Was it a gunshot or did he hang himself or what?
Yeah, he was a 38. He crawled into his tent, and we still don't know why, but he shot himself in the head.
Okay.
Yeah, I've come across that several times. It can be quite unpleasant.
Oh, really? Okay. Let me ask you this before it leaves my mind. Were you there when they found him, or do you go out?
Not on that one. I was not on that case. I have gone out many, many, many times with search and rescue or search and recovery, and I have been present when we found people.
Oh, you have?
But okay. not on that specific case.
Okay. Now, when you say psychic, you're talking about an actual psychic medium person.
Right.
Okay. So do you work with the same ones every time, or are they always working together with you, or what?
Generally, yeah. I have people who call me up every once in a while and say, you know, they do it more than I do. I'll get a phone call and, hey, Dan, can you help me out with this particular case? Can you do a reading on this and tell me what you find, that sort of thing?
Oh, really? Okay.
But like I said, yeah, in fact, I worked on a case in England about 2 weeks ago.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
That one I cannot discuss. It's an open case.
Open case. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
No, it's okay.
But yeah, I was trying to prevent something from happening. Let me put it that way.
I got you. Okay. Was it an adult or a child? Can you tell us that?
It involved several adults.
Got you.
I don't do that as much as I used to, primarily because I've developed, you know, this interest in the paranormal. But yeah, I still do a little helping out with search and rescue, that sort of thing.
I got you. That is very interesting. I'm really interested in that.
Okay, oh, fascinating. So
it is. Can you tell us the psychic that you work with, or can you name them, or no?
Well, one of my friends over in England, Jeanette Healy, I do a lot of work with her.
Jeanette Healy. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
She's
I don't want to mention too many because, you know, why did you leave me out, Dan, that sort of thing.
Right. I see. Yeah, you don't.
But yeah, Jeanette, I mentioned her because she's the last one I worked with.
All right.
She's also an author.
Oh, she is? Okay. So maybe I can contact her. I'd like to talk to her.
Yeah, after we're through, send me an email. I'll send you her contact information.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that, Dan. If a family came to you and wanted to get your help finding a loved one or something like that, I mean, would you do that? Or would you always have to be pulled in on a case from the authorities directly?
I prefer to work through the authorities. The family can request me through the authorities.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. In other words, you know, if I start working on my own without working through the authorities, I could really unintentionally mess up, you know, follow up a case pretty badly.
Oh, yeah. I understand that. Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about one more. I want to talk about a missing child case like that that you've worked on. Can you tell us about one of your cases?
Yeah, we worked a case. Yeah, the Jesse Lee Dugard case, that goes way, way, way back. She disappeared more than 20 years ago, and I believe this was out in California. I'm kind of reaching back in my memory hole here. Yeah, Jesse Lee had been missing for 20 years, and she was presumed by almost everyone to be, you know, deceased, kidnapped, and murdered. There were several of us who did a reading on it, and I forget who requested it, but we did a reading on it, and there were four or five of us who said, no, she is still alive. She is alive, and she has been kept prisoner, and we doused specific locations. In fact, I doused, using the pendulum, I doused a description of the location where she was being kept. And eventually, the authorities went back into the case and found her. She had been kidnapped and held basically in white slavery for 20 years. But through a lot of police work and through help of the psychics, we were able to get her out, and she, you know, got out of that bad situation.
That is incredible right there.
Yeah, she was.
Did that make headlines? I mean, was that?
Oh, yeah, that was a big story at the time. I said, this goes way back.
Unreal.
Most of the stories don't make the news.
I see. Okay.
Like I said, by the time I get called in, it's basically old news, cold cases.
Yeah, yeah. I want to ask you about your technique here for a moment, Dan.
Yeah.
When you're actually dousing and you're out in the field, are you actually holding the pendulum in your hand, or is it attached to a stick, or? How do you do that?
Hand. Yeah, basically with thumb and forefinger, and just hold it. And normally I will do a reading at my house or at my office. And then when I go out into the field, I will carry it with me and, you know, ask questions. You know, am I close to the location? Should I go north? Should I go south? That sort of thing.
Now, at first I would imagine, you know, you're probably kind of wondering whether or not you're actually doing something to the pendulum to move it. Did you go through that in your mind? Like, okay, am I doing this right? You know, am I moving slightly to make it, you know, go counterclockwise or what? I mean, how did you overcome that?
Yeah, the hardest part of pendulum dowsing for your audience, pendulum dowsing is incredibly easy to pick up and to learn. You can pick it up in no time at all. The hard part is keeping your mind clear so that you don't force the answers. The actual movement of the pendulum is, again, it's not magic. It's done by micro muscles basically in your fingers, what actually moves the pendulum. And what makes it work is the connection between the higher power and your subconscious mind. So the trick to it is keeping your mind clear so that, you know, your subconscious provides the answer rather than your conscious mind.
I got you. Now, do you have to hold it?
Yeah. It's a physical connection between, you know, the physical body, you know, your finger and your subconscious mind and that higher power.
I got you.
It's teamwork.
Yeah. Yeah. Incredible. I can just ask you about missing person cases all day, but we need to jump into the paranormal stuff now. All right. So how did you, you know, go from finding missing people to investigating paranormal?
Yeah, it was kind of a natural evolution. Some friends of mine who were investigating with me, you know, investigating missing persons, we became friends. And one day we said, they were very active in investigating the paranormal also. And we were visiting with them. We said, well, you know, you guys are psychic mediums, and I'm a pendulum dowser. I wonder what would happen if we combined our skills. So we went out and a couple of locations and combined our skills, you know, mediumship with pendulum dowsing, and we were able to make contact with the spirits. And it kind of, my interest blossomed from there.
Tell us about some of the locations you guys investigated.
Well, around here, let's see. The new book I'm working on involves sites in Arizona, New Mexico, and in Louisiana, investigating, you know, different paranormal locations. Everything from somebody's house where they live in, where they're currently living into ghost towns and ghost mines, and even just the wide open spaces.
I see. Now, okay, so what are you doing different, if anything, when it comes to paranormal investigations and finding missing children?
I don't really know how to answer that. The difference is when you're looking for a missing person, that person is in one specific place. And either, you know, if I'm doing it right, I find the missing person. If I'm doing it wrong, you know, I don't find them. In the paranormal experience, you're dealing with people who are, you know, have crossed over, and they could be any place at any time.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm asking that because knowing that in some hauntings, you know, in some hauntings, spirits can, you know, move things. So I'm wondering, how are you able to discern whether or not you're getting a genuine answer and there's not some spirit actually moving that pendulum?
Yeah, generally, you know, once you learn the pendulum dowsing, you can tell. It's like with any other skill, you can tell what's going on.
Got you. All right. Now, okay, as far as like paranormal cases, of course, you know, the police aren't going to be investigating those. So, you know, do you work those cases on behalf of families?
Right now, I'm primarily working on as research for books that I am writing or books that I want to write. And I have been called in on a couple of cases to, you know, to find out, you know, what's going on in my house or what's going on with me. Yeah, I do help some people like that. But my research primarily is I'm trying to write books to let people know what's going on out there.
I see. Okay. Can you talk to us about, like, when you do go out and investigate some of these cases, I mean, what kind of results are you getting? Are you finding out that it's, you know, I don't know, the uncle haunting in the place or some kind of disembodied spirit that's lost or something? I mean, have you gotten anything like that before or what?
Yeah, finding, making contact with this people, with spirits, is phenomenally easy. I mean, you know, primarily if they're back over here on this side, they primarily are willing to converse with people. It's remarkably easy. One of the books that I'm writing right now will dispel a lot of myths about ghosts, at least from my experience. Like, for example, I've never had a negative ghostly spirit. I've never had a bad experience talking with a spirit, not even close to it. They've all been very friendly and very open.
So have you had any kind of unusual things happen to you?
I would say the most unusual would be every once in a while you find a spirit who is trapped on this side. In other words, they have passed, they've died, but they're afraid to cross over to what we call, you know, going into the light. They're afraid to do that because they're afraid of what might happen to them on the other side. And I've been privileged to be in a position to actually release some of those spirits.
How do you do that? Are you asking them to cross over? I mean, how are you doing?
Yeah, basically, yeah. The thing about spirit, at least the way that I approach it, and the people that I'm working with now approach it, is, you know, you're talking with people who are basically people, they just don't have a body. So it's basically a conversation. you know, you and you tell them, you know, it's okay for you to cross over. Whatever it is you're afraid of is not going to happen. It's all love and light over there. So go ahead and cross on over. And basically, it's a conversation. Sometimes it's extremely emotional.
Now, when you're doing this, say you're trying to cross over a spirit, is the family there with you, or do you ask them to leave the house while you do this, or what?
It's never happened to me with a family around. I've done it pretty much by accident. You know, you come across someone and you find out that person is actually trapped there. It's not like I planned to go there and release this person. It's just you basically stumble across it.
Okay, so you're saying that when you're dowsing and you're communicating with this spirit, they're actually telling you, look, I'm stuck here. I can't leave,
yeah,
or I don't want to leave.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Again, it's through a series of questions, you know. Are you happy here? You get a yes or no. So you're not happy here. I'm not happy here. Are you afraid to cross over? You'll get a yes answer. And at that point, you can stop using the pendulum and you just say, look, man, it's okay for you to cross over. If you got a second, I've had a fascinating case down in Tombstone, Arizona. Me and my buddies we were doing a demonstration, and we came across a spirit who was trapped, and he had committed a murder back in the 1880s, had killed his brother, and he was afraid to cross over. So he was trapped on Earth, and I say he was self-trapped. I mean, you know, nobody was holding him back except for his own mental faculties. He was afraid to cross over. So we started talking to the guy, and another spirit showed up. And this was the spirit of the murdered man, his brother, had showed up to say, hey, I forgive you. And so at that point, we had three human beings, physical human beings, and a spirit working on another spirit to try to get that spirit to cross over. And when he finally let go and crossed over, it was just like a wave of emotional release that went through everybody. There wasn't a dry eye in the house. And that was an accident. We just stumbled across it, and we're in the right place at the right time.
Amazing.
It was truly amazing. I mean, I was emotional for 3 days afterwards.
Wow. Okay, I want to ask you, how much of a rotation are you getting when the answers come across? I mean, is it just a little bit of rotation, or are you getting, I mean, is that thing just swinging around like nobody's business? I mean, what's going on?
It will vary from barely moving to swinging wildly.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
And then after that answer comes across, you stop it with your hand, and then you start all over with the next question.
Yeah, my process, sometimes I'll start it swinging backwards and forward so that it's a null movement, and then I'll ask a question, and it'll go right or left. And after that, after it goes right or left, I will stop and get it back to the null movement and then ask the next question. So there's a clear break.
I see. Okay, so it's always a rotational. Okay, so you're looking for your answers to come through as a rotation for the pendulum. It's never a back and forth. You said it's always rotation, like clockwise or?
Yeah, generally, okay. In my case, now, when I get a back and forth movement, that's generally an indication that I've asked a bad question. In other words, with the pendulum dowsing, you can't ask multiple choices. You can't say, you know, is the missing person a blonde or a brunette? Because there's no way to get a yes or no answer out of that. You have to ask, is the person blonde? Yes or no. Is the person brunette? Yes or no. So if it's a null movement, usually I need to re-ask the question. And sometimes it means the spirit just doesn't want to answer.
Okay. Whether it's just you discount it, whether it's left or right or up and back. I mean,
yeah,
that's not an answer for you, correct?
For me, yeah.
Got you.
Or the answer may be, you know, you need to ask a question another way, dummy.
I see.
You know, it's still communication.
Yeah.
There's another thing I've noticed you might find interesting. Sometimes the pendulum will drop from my hand. And that generally means that the spirit that I'm talking to has left the room. I don't know why that works, but if I'm doing this pendulum, and sometimes it'll just flat out drop. I'll pick it back up and I'll ask, you know, is the spirit still here? And I'll get a no.
I see. All right. So you're saying it's not you. Is it something pulling it out of your hand, or how is
that? No, again, it's a response. It's a physical response of the muscles in your finger responding to your subconscious, which is responding to, you know, the higher power.
See, and your fingers are just loosening up and it just falls.
Gotcha. Yeah, your subconscious has, apparently the connection is broken, so it just kind of drops out of my hand.
Gotcha.
Yeah, we had a situation back in Louisiana. A young lady I was working with had just lost her mother, and we were talking to a spirit of a man from the 1880s, and she just asked, is it possible for someone, you, Mr. 1880 spirit, to go see my mother? And I got a yes. And she asked the spirit, would you go tell my mother hello and that I love her? And I got a yes. And the pendulum dropped out of my hands. So at that moment, the spirit left and went to carry the message to the girl's mother.
Wow. Interesting. It really is. Have you ever had an attachment or thought you know, a spirit might have followed you back from a location?
I don't want to say followed, but I've had a couple of experiences where I think a spirit has just kind of checked in to say hello.
How do you know that?
With me, I get kind of a clear emotional feeling. Like I was given a presentation to a couple hundred people up in Utah, and I started telling one of my spirit encounters, and I almost broke down crying. I mean, I had to stop because I felt a wave of emotion, and I recognized that I had that same emotion researching that same spirit, you know, a couple of times earlier. And I think she just dropped in to say hello.
I know that some people do experience, you know, very strong emotions when they are in the presence of a spirit or when they think they're in the presence of certain spirits.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, people will notice, and it has happened to me once when a friend or a relative passes on, sometimes you'll get a feeling that same day of contact with that spirit. I think that really happens.
Yeah,
you know,
I do too.
Basically kind of comes by to say, you know, I'm going on.
Yeah, I'm gone.
And
yeah.
Say, I love you. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about some more of your paranormal investigations. Have you investigated any famous locations?
Let's see. Well, the most famous would have to be, Tombstone, Arizona. But I've also investigated, there's a place in Shreveport, Louisiana called Fort Humbug. It's an old Confederate fort that was famous back during the Civil War. I've investigated, you know, different ghost towns, ghost mines.
What about any haunted bed and breakfasts or anything like that?
None comes to mind. I've been doing this for 5 years. I don't think I've done a bed and breakfast. Well, I take it back. Yeah, there's a place down in Tombstone called the Buford House. It is the most haunted house in Tombstone, and I've spent a couple of nights down there.
What kind of contact were you getting down
there? Yeah, that one, the spirits did not really show up that much for me. It's haunted by several children, but I did have one experience there. I had a couple of small experiences there, but the most dramatic was I took some toys and I went to each room and left the toys for the kids to play with. And in one room, I had four rubber balls, and I placed them at different places around the room. And I said, ask the kids, you know, have fun, play with the rubber balls. And one dropped out of my hand and rolled under this, you know, it's a historic bed. And I just said, okay, I'm going to leave that one alone. It was way under the bed. The next morning, I came back and that ball had moved to the base, to the bottom of the bed on the floor. The interesting thing to do that, there was a trunk at the base of the bed, so it could not have rolled straight down, you know, to the base of the bed on the floor. It had to move out under the bed, out to the side of the bed, down the side of the bed, then back across to the middle of where the trunk was. So somebody moved that rubber ball, and it wasn't me. So it was one of the kids playing.
Got you. All right. Are you working on any other paranormal investigations right now? I mean,
right now, when I was working on the paranormal pendulum, its subtitle is Dowsing the Dead, and that's a book about how someone can use the pendulum to actually make contact with the spirit world. I started getting so much information, so many great stories about, you know, what it's like to be deceased and what it's like to cross over and what it's like on the other side. Basically, culled that information down for the paranormal pendulum, and I put it into a book that I'll finish in the next month. I think I'm going to call it The Paranormal Pendulum 2, What These Spirits Say. And it's a whole book about conversations with spirit world, with spirits, about what happens when you pass over. And I've asked questions, again, from people from Arizona all the way to Louisiana, and I try to get the information from many different sources. And I want to cover subjects like what it's like the moment when you pass, what it's like in the light, when you're traveling in the light, what it's like on the other side. Is there anything to reincarnation? Can spirits come back over here? Do spirits guide people? That sort of thing. That's fascinating. It's just, the answers I'm getting are incredible.
Yeah.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagram. diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/diagram now and get a free business plan trial to unlock even more features like advanced shapes, dependency mapping, and two-way Jira syncing. Get started today at Miro.com/diagram now.
And when does that come out?
Well, I'm writing it right now. Probably I'll finish it. I'll say the first quarter of this year.
Yeah.
Probably
you have
by
to come
March.
Back and talk about that for sure.
I will give you an email and let you know because, yeah, it's fascinating. Some of the stuff you've heard before, and it's not surprising. Some of the other things are really, really astounding.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, one of the big surprises to me is the variety of options you have once you cross over, and I try to go into a good bit about that.
Really?
Yeah.
I wish you could tell us now.
Yeah, it's not a matter of, you know, you cross over and you get your wings or your pitchfork. You cross over, and there's kind of a settlement period, and then it's kind of like what do you want to do with the rest of your life?
Really? So there's like a period where is it you're just in wait, you're waiting for something, or you're...
Yeah, apparently, kind of boiling this down, once you cross over, you know, you run into the typical, you know, your friends and family are there. Apparently, that's there just to kind of help the spirit adjust to the new situation. And apparently, from everything that I've talked to, the situation is beyond wonderful. It's an incredible feeling. And you have a certain amount of time there where you kind of adjust to the new environment, and then you have different options as to what you want to do. You can come back over. You can continue to progress spiritually on the other side. There's all kinds of things going on.
Wow. Yes, please come back and talk about that.
Yeah, would love to. I'll keep you posted.
Yes, definitely. All right, I want to get into map dowsing now. How does that work for you, and who gave you the idea that you could even use dowsing on maps?
It's a standard technique. If you read anything about any books on dowsing, including my own, basically what you do is you look at it, you take a map, and you can use the yes or no. There are several different techniques. You can use the yes or no technique. In other words, say I'm looking at Arizona and trying to find a missing person. Basically, you have the whole state of Arizona, and what you try to do is, through questioning, reduce the size of your research area. So you would go, is this person south of Interstate 40? Say you get a yes. Is this person north of Interstate 10? You would get a yes. So that narrows down your area. Then say you would, is this person east of I-17? You get a yes. So that narrows down your area. And you finally go down to, you know, north, south, east, west of this road or this town or this specific area. And you can use your map to say, you know, is it in this town here? Then you can look at a map of that town and you can actually, you know, is this person north of this street or south of this street? And you just keep breaking it down, 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 till you can actually get down to, you know, street addresses.
Right.
Yeah, another way to do it is to take a ruler across a map, say moving it north and south, and spin your pendulum at the same time and say, yeah, please give me a yes answer when I'm on the east-west marker. And when your pendulum spins yes, you mark a line across that map. Then you do the same thing north-south. Give me a yes response when I'm on the marker of this person. When you get a yes response, you draw another line north-south. And at that point, you've got a, you know, X marks the spot.
Well, maybe you should go down and tell the guys who are digging up Oak Island. help them find something.
Yeah, well, if they will cut me in on the profits, yeah, I'd be glad to do that.
I'm so tired of them digging around.
One thing that I don't do, people ask me, you know, if you're so good at this pendulum dowsing, how come you haven't won the lottery? And my answer is, for me, that would be an abuse of power, abuse of the gift.
Right, right. Well, no one wants to win anything that way. I would hope not, you know, no.
Yeah, in fact, the way my mind is set, I think I would get in my own way of doing that.
That's right.
Exactly. Yeah, because right. I'm not supposed to do that.
Right. You have a lot of integrity, so that's why you're not following.
I try.
I'm trying to do anything like that. All right. This is really, you know, I've really enjoyed this conversation with you, Dan. Before we go, I want you to tell my listeners about anything else you're working on.
Well, you can find all the books that I work on are available in paperback and ebook, and they're from Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble. Wherever you buy your books, you can buy my books. I'm working on a series of paranormal books, all related to the pendulum. My first one was, you know, The Practical Pendulum. It's basically a guide. I've got the Psychic Detective Guidebook. I've got several books on exploring the paranormal. But I'm also, you know, I'm a novelist. I write westerns. I write thrillers. I write short story collections, political thrillers, that sort of thing. I try to be eclectic.
There you go. I know that. I saw all the books. You're a ghostwriter, so you've maybe more than 50 books you've written?
I've got about 60 books with somebody else's name on the cover.
Wow. Mm.
That's very interesting. It's like I get to meet a lot of very fascinating people.
Well, that's awesome, Dan. I hope to bring you back to talk about the new book you're working on. And I will have Dan's links in the show notes. Dan, many blessings to you, and I really appreciate your time.
Well, the same back to you.
All right, Dan Baldwin, my special guest. His book is called The Paranormal Pendulum, and that is available right now in paperback and also Kindle on Amazon. I will have links to where you can find Dan in the show notes and also on the Mysterious Radio website. I want to thank my producer tonight, Kim, and the Mysterious Radio team. I want to leave you with some words of encouragement, so I want you to repeat after me. My potential to succeed is limitless. I want you to stay safe and stay healthy, and I will see you next time on Mysterious Radio.
Like the show? Get more Mysterious Radio on our website. And don't forget to visit our Twitter and Facebook page.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile Coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.